We now return to WCHL's 2013 Carborough Board of Aldermen Candidates Forum. Once again, here's your moderator, Aaron Keck.
Welcome back, and thanks again to Kurt Solter, Randy Haven O'Donnell, Sammy Slade, and Jacqueline Gist, four of the five candidates for three seats on the Board of Aldermen this year joining us. We are now in the second half of our forum, and again, we're talking about the topic of development and related issues. This next question, again, you'll have 1 minute to respond, and then 3 minutes of open discussion. This next question goes to Jacqueline Gist, and given our discussion in the first hour, no better place to begin than parking. What should be Carborough's downtown parking plan? What should the town do, if anything, in the next 4 years to improve or address the parking situation, particularly given the coming new developments?
Carborough's done a lot already to address the parking situation. We bought the lot on the corner of Carr and Greensboro. We currently have several floors of the parking garage behind the behind the new hotel. We have scattered free parking throughout the downtown. I think that we need to maintain that. One of my plans is, and the town, the intention was that to work with the property on the corner of Greensboro and Carr to sell the like two and three, maybe four stories above that, so that we can maintain the parking there. At the same time, we need to discourage people from using our downtown as the park and ride lot for the university. That's the big problem. That's one of the big problems. I would love to see the university, and I've proposed this for several years, like to see the university not give on-campus parking to people who live within 2 miles of campus. They did that, we would have fewer students and university employees using our downtown as an auxiliary parking lot for the university.
Follow-ups to that. Kurt Stolka.
I think we really need to incrementally raise the parking. Chapel Hill charges for parking, and I think that a monetary disincentive to commuters and it will be more effective than a UNC policy only. And I think we need to in the future centralize our parking, such as in our new parking deck, and put out RFPs for development on our current surface lots downtown. That's a lot of money that's being lost, and I think that our town can really really take advantage of that prime real estate.
Randy Haven O'Donnell.
Yeah, I think it's a three-pronged approach. I think one of the things that we need to be able to do is look at not only what parking we have now, but how will our needs change as we move towards greater use of alternatives such as zip cars. I was involved with the Blue Bike program. I'd love to see something like that reinstituted. I'd love to see bike cages in our parking structures. And the planning board actually made some recommendations regarding other parking structures that would help to ameliorate the parking issues.
Sammy Slade.
Well, the parking plan is going to help us get us a better sense and grasp of what we actually need in Carborough. And I can imagine already the way in which private parking lot owners, some of them in town, don't allow other people who go to other businesses to park in their lots. I think there's an opportunity to convene local property owners to make them realize that parking downtown benefits everyone. And that there may be ways in which to incentivize those businesses who are grandfathered in that don't have parking to recognize that they're benefiting from those other parking lots and put money up in part to pay for the very costly proposition that parking actually is, as Kurt continually
There's a couple of there's a couple of hands up, but consider also another follow-up question. To what extent should Carborough enforce its parking rules more strictly, or are we okay as far as that goes? Kurt Stolka.
I think when we start charging for parking, that will pay for somebody to enforce the parking, and it'll be a continuous revolution of feeding that system, and that'll discourage car use. And as our needs change to reduce our car use and we become a real livable city for the next generation, cycling won't become known as an alternative means anymore, and it'll be the main means.
Jacqueline Gist.
We have watched over the past couple of years many businesses leave downtown Chapel Hill. Many of those are businesses that I frequent during during my time working there over and over and over again. When the businesses are folding, you hear from them that the lack of affordable parking and the lack of free parking is what brought them down. I am not saying turn downtown Carrboro into a parking lot. I'm not saying no bikes, no buses, no feet. I'm saying this has to be addressed as a whole, and that we can't, our downtown businesses would be devastated if we started charging for parking. Plus, the people that live in the northern areas, not everybody can ride their bike and do their grocery shopping and take three kids with them, you know? And the town is theirs as well as everybody that lives closer downtown.
Sammy first, and then Randy, and then Kurt.
So one of the things that we need to make sure is that there's enough handicap parking. I know there are a lot of people who I've already run into as I've been talking to folks in this campaign who have pointed that out. Like, and so part of the parking plan should definitely address that concern, because obviously walking, biking, and sometimes even catching the bus may not be possible. I just think that we need to really think about, through the parking plan, identify what the actual needs are and ratchet down in the same way that we had a goal for our trash. We want to reduce the amount of dependency on single occupancy vehicles.
Randy Haven O'Donnell.
We need an integrated plan, and we need a plan that hears the voices of the folks who live beyond the 2-mile perimeter. You know, one of the things that is really important to folks who live beyond that 2 miles is to be able to make multitask stops. One of the arguments we've used with trying to get the new library position downtown is that when people would come downtown, they could multitask. So, you know, I think the plan needs to be integrated. I think we want to reduce the number of cars, reduce the number of vehicles, but we also want to make sure that we're not eliminating the people who do not live immediate to downtown.
Kurt Stolka.
I think we're not inviting people and making it comfortable for people to take their families by bicycle right now. And I wouldn't want to take my family out on our main streets that all the car traffic is spilling onto because of our cul-de-sac developments that scatter throughout our town. And I think in terms of what we really need to value is bringing ourselves to a point where we draw the people that are going to help us in the future. We need to go from the Paris of the Piedmont to Carrboro, the Copenhagen of the Piedmont.
Yeah. All right, next question, again, 1 minute to respond, goes to Sammy Slade. Related question, Carrboro has already been recognized as a bike-friendly and pedestrian-friendly town, but there's always room for significant improvement. We've talked about it a little bit already. What can the town do to make itself even more amenable to bikers and pedestrians?
Well, one thing that we can do is we've already had the Open Streets event, and even before then, when we opened Weaver Street Market after it got repaved, we had an Open Streets event right in front of Weaver Street Market. There's so many people I've talked to who want to see the portion of Weaver Street in front of the market closed on Saturdays, both because they feel like it's not necessary on the weekend to have so many cars traffic through there, but because there's also a lot of concern for all the kids who play there and go into the street. I think that we should pilot right in front of the market, and then on Saturdays to have that whole stretch from Weaver Street Market all the way to the Farmers Market every Saturday closed, and have it be, it shouldn't be so costly. It's just a matter of people knowing that happens and having very simple, cost-friendly ways of closing the road.
Kurt Stolka first.
Yeah, I agree with Sammy completely. There's got to be a cheaper way to get our streets closed. It shouldn't cost thousands of dollars to put some cones to signify that the street's closed besides a sign. That's the main thing I wanted to add.
Jacqueline Gist and then Randy Haven O'Donnell.
I think one thing we can do, this is something that Carrboro needs to do better, and that's enforce our existing traffic laws. I'm not a biker, I'm a walker. I drive less than 10 miles a week. I ruin cars by not driving them enough. I take the bus and I walk places. That's getting scarier and scarier because people are not obeying the traffic laws. People are speeding. People are going through So it's like cars aren't acting right, bikes aren't acting right, walkers aren't acting right. We all need to follow the laws, and people need to start getting ticketed for going through the pedestrian walkway, for speeding through town. More people would walk and more would bike if we started enforcing those better.
Randy Haven O'Donnell.
Okay, well, one of the things, and I agree, I think Kurt said this before, is create a Woundfort out of East Weaver Street, where it's a closed street. It makes absolute sense to me, provided that's comfortable for the businesses. The second is attending the North Carolina Bike Summit this weekend. Several of the sessions had superior plans that they talked about and that can be executed and enacted that move people from being uncomfortable that are maybe possibly interested to being more comfortable and more interested and take the opportunity to bike and walk. And I think we absolutely need to look to do that.
Before we get to Kurt and Sammy, three people have already said they're in favor of closing down that section of Weaver Street for certain periods. Jacqueline Gist, your thoughts on that?
I see closing it for special events. Closing it permanently, I don't know. I have voted against that in the past because of fears from surrounding businesses and from people who want to get home. So if we could figure it out in a way that it would enhance things rather than detracting from things, then yeah, but I would need to see evidence of that.
Okay, Kurt Stolka.
What Jackie just said reminded me of how Times Square was open to traffic, and that was closed and pedestrianized, and the traffic flow actually improved, and it's not going to cut off access to people if they keep going straight and then take a right at our light past the Century Center. In addition to that, the cycling infrastructure improvements I think need to be made are making sure that residential zones are more amenable to cyclists and slow that traffic down that likes to cut through neighborhoods at high speed, as well as separating the high-speed roads like Greensboro and Main Street that are 30 miles per hour and up with either buffered cones or rumbling along the bike lane line to signify that that's not a space for cars, and we need to make it a space for people.
Sammy Slate.
Firstly, I think we should start using the language, or continue using as it's already been established, opening the streets up. And we want to open it up to human scale ways of getting around in our town. The other thing was, along with the bike summit, I learned a lot at that summit. One of the things that stood out and what Randy was alluding to is people who are reluctant to use, share the road with cars, find it to be a lot easier, like more likely to use their bikes if they had a dedicated bike lane. And that really stood out to me. And this was done in Portland. And it's the biggest chunk of the population that would use bicycles more if they had a dedicated lane.
And sort of going along with that, talking with Elizabeth Friend before this forum, she mentioned the Main Street Road Diet, which was converting four lanes to three lanes plus bike lanes on Main Street between Town Hall and Carborough Elementary. Seems to have been successful. Would you consider that elsewhere? Where else would you consider it, Kurt Stolka?
All of Main Street. I can think of right in front of the Hampton Inn that needs it desperately. That and Jones Ferry is going to have a cycle track on it coming in the next year, which was sorely needed. And I was extremely surprised that NCDOT suggested to us. We didn't even push for it. And in relation to that, I think we need to do more of a survey about what women want to be comfortable to cycle on our streets. Something that Vienna, Austria did was they surveyed the women in the city and helped change the cycling infrastructure to address what their needs were.
I hope someone out there is keeping a running list of the different cities that we're referring to, because it's the most ecumenical forum I think we've ever had. Randy Haven O'Donnell.
Well, I think that, I agree with Jones Ferry Road. I agree with the rest of Weaver Street. I got to give Jeff Brubaker a shout out, because he did a magnificent job of coming up with that plan. I think that it's not whether or not I can come up with these places now, but we know it works. And we know it's increased the level of comfort. And so I think Jones Ferry Road right now is going to transition. That's going to be a good place to have it. The only thing I wish is that we could have done more with Smith Level.
Sammy Slade, last word.
And yeah, I was going to say Jeff Brubaker is a huge asset, but also we are so fortunate to be so close to UNC and have so many really valuable people on our transportation advisory board. So the idea of the road diet, I think, originated on the transportation advisory board, and I've been serving as liaison. So I want to give a shout out to the transportation advisory board members because we're very lucky. Because the whole bike summit thing that we had this weekend, so many people who are on that board are also part of the bike coalition. And then, of course, all the other businesses that are primary transportation, start using that language in our town.
Okay, next question goes to Randy Haven O'Donnell. Again, you have a minute to respond and then open the floor for several 30-second comments from everyone else. Talking about the developments themselves, there's always talk about the rural buffer in Orange County. In Carrboro, there's also been talk about an urban buffer when it comes to developments in town, something that has been brought up again already, namely making sure that when you have major retail and office and business space, you're also leaving ample space between that and residential areas so you're not putting too great a strain on nearby residents. To what extent should the town seek to guarantee that urban buffer when looking at development proposals?
I wouldn't call it an urban buffer so much as, I mean, the lines are immediate. There isn't that much of, a couple of feet between residential mill homes and commercial. So, you know, as we master plan for downtown, we need to create these transitional zones between or transitional spaces between residential and commercial because we need to make human scale our commercial, and we need transitional spaces to do this and also to protect our residential and our historic neighborhoods.
Follow-ups to that, and just sort of the follow-up question, the discussion of that buffer, whatever we're calling it, obviously CVS is sort of the underlying specific issue. So also, what lessons do we learn from that discussion? Jackie gets first.
We have neighborhood buffers, and we've had them in place. Right now, it's protecting our neighborhood buffers and not letting them be eaten into. That's the issue, because you go one row of houses back, and then what happens to the next one? And pretty soon, it's a real slippery slope. I cut my teeth politically in this town with Friends of Old Carrboro, which was the group that started out with the preservation of downtown Carrboro. So that's very near and dear to me. When Carrboro changed its zoning downtown and went to five-story buildings, I initiated and served on the group that created the new buffer with setbacks and stepbacks to protect our neighborhoods. I want to see that revisited because I don't think it's strong enough. And now that the board's changed, I want to make that stronger.
Kurt Stolka.
I think that in terms of the urban growth boundary, we can't be Portland because there's still, I think it might be too restrictive for this country to enact. But in terms of our neighborhoods, I think we need to actually diversify and mix the uses of our town that where it already is built out. And that'll create less need to drive downtown for goods and services, and it'll enable people to walk around more and enjoy their neighborhood instead of hopping in their car and driving somewhere to experience it.
Follow-ups? Sammy Slade.
I think that the northern part of Carrboro, we need to seriously consider on major thoroughfares more higher density so that this issue, which is a real issue of people in our northern part of town not being able to access our downtown without use of car, unless they have a lot of time to do that. So we need to, and we've had attempts. We've had we put out calls for landowners to offer their property so that the town of Carrboro would do a study on those properties. And unfortunately, not too many property owners participated in that. But it's something that we have to continue and push for and encourage for the northern part of our town. And I think it goes along with this comprehensive plan that we were talking about earlier, to really identify where it's appropriate to have urban, where it's appropriate to have conservation spaces, and where the transportation corridors are that can service those urban areas.
Jacqueline Gist, and then Kurt, and then Randy.
I agree with that. The thing is, we need to make sure that outside of the downtown, that what goes near neighborhoods is what people want. You know, I think there's a great fear of having strip malls. Well, we're not going to let that happen. But it needs to come with buy-in from the neighborhoods that are affected. Otherwise, it's us telling them what they want instead of or us telling them what they should want, as opposed to people speaking up for themselves. I hear a lot about needing like little versions of Weaver Street Market up in the northern area. That would work.
I can't remember what the order was. Is it Kurt, then Randy? Kurt, then Randy, yeah.
And one thing that Jackie mentioned was the setbacks that need to be preserved, but I think that they actually create more of an unwelcoming atmosphere, and it takes people away from the street. So that, like, for example, I'm thinking of West Main Street. There's old single-family homes that are now businesses, but I think that it would be better served for them if they're right up on the sidewalk so that people can look into the windows and see them and perhaps go inside more frequently. And I think with the comprehensive plan, that's going to include regular community feedback, so people have that input and things aren't built where they don't want it to because they provided the input, and the town really needs to focus on getting that input.
Last word, Randy Haven O'Donnell. We'll get to the comprehensive plan next.
I just feel that we need networked and more frequent bus transit in outside of the downtown area. I feel that that is one of the things that's sorely lacking. Jackie's exactly right. We need to find out what people want who already live in the neighborhoods beyond the immediate downtown. We shouldn't make assumptions, we need to be proactive rather than reactive and wait till a public hearing to hear that folks are dissatisfied with plans that have been made. So I definitely would want to collaborate.
Still got a lot more to say on the topic of development and all those related issues. We got to move on to our next four questions. For those four questions, I'll select one candidate each. That candidate will have 2 minutes to respond, and then we'll open the floor for 5 minutes of discussion. Again, during that time, candidates, please limit your individual comments to 30 seconds each, but you'll have as many chances to speak as you want. This question goes to Jacqueline Gist. In the coming months, the town of Carrboro will begin the process of developing a new comprehensive plan. Chapel Hill, of course, developed theirs by soliciting as much public input as possible. Is that a model for Carrboro to follow? What should be Carrboro's approach in developing its own comprehensive plan? And what would you personally like to see in the new plan when it's finished?
We had a presentation at last week's board meeting on the comprehensive plan. And Trish McGuire explained to us, clarified, that we already have a lot of the pieces that are necessary for a comprehensive plan. It's pulling them all together. I think the most important thing in pulling all of our pieces together and have something that we're labeling as a comprehensive plan is that it's easy to understand, and that it's easy for neighbors to understand, and particularly easy for new businesses wanting to move in. It's very expensive to have to keep coming back and back and back. Is this what you want? Is this what you want? Is this what you want? So I think with the comprehensive plan, we have much more than Vision 2020. There are like 15 different documents that define Carrboro's planning, and I probably have that number wrong, but we have a lot of documents that have been very seriously worked on. We have spent many hundreds of hours and many tens of thousands of dollars putting together all these plans. We are not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But I think the most important thing is clarity for both the surrounding community and for somebody wanting to come here and do business. That should be the end product, and it needs to be easy to read and free of jargon. Yeah.
Follow-ups, Kurt Stolka.
I think one thing I'd like to see in the comprehensive plan is more of a form-based code instead of based on what use can be applied in a certain area. And I think that'll create a lot more vibrancy throughout our town, and as well as allow any potential developers to know what to expect. And it'll significantly cut the year-and-a-half red tape that allowed us to lose Strata Solar to Chatham County.
Randy Haven O'Donnell.
I think that the comprehensive plan is one that's like a jigsaw puzzle. We need to figure out which pieces are missing. Where are these loopholes that things fall through? So that's one of the things I think that our planning director, Trish McGuire, referred to. I also think that there's going to be times that we might be able to use a form-based code model to help inform our thinking about what can go in certain places. But one of the things that's been good about Carrboro is that with all the planning documents we have been very strong about our values, and that's what's come through in our sense of place.
Sammy Slade.
So, yeah, the presentation the other day by Trish basically laid out how we already have all these documents. It's time to corral them and make them all into one document so when developers do come into town, they're not like, what, this, there, that, this. But the next step after that, I think, is also to, through a community involvement process and combined with kind of the values already expressed through the 2020 vision document that we already have, is to really be thinking about our water and our power generation and our local living economy and the waste and food and environmental constraints and create the map that could guide us as we think more in how to implement the vision through our zoning or form-based code.
Follow-ups? All right, next question goes to Kurt Stolka. Next two questions actually deal with the edge of Carrboro. Looking outside downtown, getting back sort of to the development issue, looking outside downtown to Carrboro's borders, to what extent should the town seek to promote development on the outskirts of town, both West 54 and north of Hillsborough Street, and what should the town look to put there?
I think we need to discourage any further development outside of town. There are great rural areas that we need to preserve and keep and allow them to keep their integrity. I think we can do that by, I'm not really versed on the actual Owassa boundaries, but I think if we don't allow any further water sewer expansion outside of our current area, I think that'll do a great deal of discouraging any further development and make it much more expensive for anybody that wishes to, as well as continue working with Orange County with our ETJ planning to make sure that nothing is allowable in that zone.
Follow-ups to that? Randy Haven O'Donnell. Well,
we have on West 54, we do have one M1 from manufacturing. And actually, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we were looking at how best we can extend their permitting so that they can develop that parcel. So there's very few parcels. I think there's one or two out 54, but then the rest is protected. So, you know, I my sense is that when we look at the edge of Carrboro, I think we just need to look at, you know, how best do we protect it and keep it within the values of the system we have currently.
I know light manufacturing has come up as a possibility. Who's the they you were referring to there? Is that a particular business?
Yes, okay. On 54.
Mm-hmm. It's a property owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a property owner.
Follow-ups to that? Just, Jacqueline Gist, yeah. And then Sammy Slade.
Just as the General Assembly is a great threat to our environment, it's also a bit of a threat to our zoning. We are we very, very likely will lose all ETJs next year. And that's not just we won't be able to create them, we will lose them. There's some feeling now that here that will probably be okay because of the plans and the agreements that we already have in place with the county, that those will be respected and we'll work it out that way. But that's a great change, and that will impact the way we think about what we're able to do as we continue to grow.
Sammy Slade.
That was pretty much what I was going to say, but yeah, just also reaffirming the fact that west of 54 is mostly the watershed, and we certainly should not mess with it. It has to stay as it is, but it's also west of 86 is our transition area that could, in theory, be expanded, and with the changes in the legislature, that could all be thrown up in the air.
Follow up for people who don't know, there's been this talk about losing ETJs. What would that entail for the town of Carrboro, Kurt Stolka?
Extraterritorial right. Jurisdictions. They actually allow future annexation of those areas for the town to occupy and start getting tax revenue from. And what the state did was not allow that to happen in the future and have to get permission from somebody if you can annex them, which is never going to happen.
Jacqueline, yes.
Well, it's not just the annexation. Like they ruled out involuntary annexation. I was never a fan of that. I voted against the involuntary annexation that Carborough did. It's also planning out there. We won't be able to do that. And that's not just because we're going to annex it. It's because that lets you look at the whole picture of what's going on, because it's not just the people who live within a two-mile radius that impact what's happening. But luckily, our relationship, we're in much better shape than, say, Asheville is in their relationship with Buncombe County, because we've worked out these other plans together. But it's just another example of the, what's a polite word I can overreach. Use on radio? Thank you. Overreach. Thank you. Of the overreach of the legislature.
Yeah. We've got to move ahead. Next question goes to Randy Haven O'Donnell. This also has to do with on the edges of Carborough and getting back also to the ETJ issue, although in this case the ETJ issue has more to do with Chapel Hill. This is a question that comes to us via Twitter from Kristen Smith. It's about Rogers Road. What are the candidates' plans for Carborough paying their fair share of the solution for Rogers Road, specifically the full cost of the Line 6 segment in the part of Rogers Road that has been annexed by Carborough?
Yeah, well, Carborough, you know, we quickly realized that there's, our responsibility is 14%, which is $900,000, and so we immediately put that on the table and said we are committing to this, and you're right, we don't have the ETJ issue with our Rogers Road parcels that Chapel Hill has. So it's going to be very interesting to see how Chapel Hill navigates that. But for us, we are firmly committed, and Sammy's on the task force, and Michelle, and it's a task force that also includes commissioners and Chapel Hill folks. And the remarkable work that they've done this year is to at least get us to a point where we have some recommendations that are solid for not only the water and sewer, but also for the community center.
Follow-ups to that, Sammy Slade.
So, yeah, we've gone further than what I've been told it's ever gone before in bringing sewer to that to the Rogers Road Historic Neighborhood. And it's been a great honor to serve on that task force. And we, Carborough has straight up put up, you know, our 900,000, we allocated half of it this year to show how serious we are in getting sewer out to the community. There's still some hitches. Tonight, I think the town of Chapel Hill is looking at extending the ETJ to that area so they can allocate resources legally. And then the county has an investigation with the EPA, and I'm really encouraging them to negotiate because they have an interpretation that they can't even talk about further negotiation. So we're hoping to push that further.
Follow-ups to that? Jacqueline Gist.
To say that my commitment to Rogers Road goes back to the 90s. Mike Nelson and I and member of Chapel Hill Board, we were the ones who stopped the expansion of the current landfill. And we insisted on facilitated community meetings to begin to look at what the neighborhood wanted. And a long list came out of that. And it's taken much, much longer than it should have to get there. But things have happened. And the main thing was they were going to expand what's already there. So the things that are currently coming up, we were definitely a part of moving those forward.
Kurt Stolka.
This may bring things full circle, but I think parking revenue for Rogers Road would be fantastic. If we had a general fund of parking revenue, we won't have to keep these types of issues at bay for so long and allow them to be satisfied much sooner the way the residents would prefer.
All right, next question goes to Sammy Slade. Again, 2 minutes to answer this one. Let's talk about housing, specifically affordable housing, getting back to this topic. We've already had a number of interesting ideas thrown out in the first hour. Getting back to it again, what, if anything, does the board need to do to promote affordable housing in Carborough? We've also had discussion of types of affordable housing, so what types of affordable housing should be promoted as well?
We have ways in which we incentivize developers to do a portion of their development for affordable housing. And that's gotten complicated because we were depending on federal money to offset and bring down the cost for some of that. And it also doesn't address a lot of the existing stock that needs to be preserved for affordable housing in our town. So again, I think we missed a huge opportunity, and we can learn a lot from the Collins Crossing situation, where it was a situation where there were reported dilapidated stairwells, and then it was sold, and now there's these assessments that is being placed, and that is causing a displacement of the community who used to live there. We need to think of ways in which to prevent that from happening in the future, to have the money to be able to buy enough units, for example, that we could make sure there isn't a majority homeowner association owner that can dictate and essentially kick out a lot of the existing homeowners. I think that would be a strategy to take seriously. Well, what that entails is to generate a significant amount of revenue to be able to purchase those units. And again, I think that we should seriously consider a 1 cent sales tax or a bond revenue to make that happen. Because without the money, we'll never achieve affordable housing in our community to the degree that it has to happen.
Everyone's got their hand up. Jackie Gist first.
Affordable housing is something that we will always be working on. There's not one solution to the affordable housing problem. If there was, this brilliant community that we live in would have solved it 30 years ago. It's an evolving problem. It's one that you constantly have to be on. There is no one answer. And our community actually is committed to working on the problem. I was on the founding board of the Orange Community Housing Corporation, and currently am Carborough's representative to the Land Trust. I would like to really push my idea of auxiliary housing units with a revolving loan fund as a way of getting people to be able to stay in their homes and to generate some money. But there are many, many different ways to attack the problem.
Randy Haven O'Donnell.
Well, affordable communities define the viability of a town, and affordability signifies the maintenance of our sustainability and resilience of our local economy. That's if you have a strong local living economy, then you've got affordability. So the role of the town of Carborough is to ensure through the policies that we design that we've master planned and that we keep a healthy stock of diverse housing. I agree, we need to increase housing density. I agree that we need to have a dedicated revenue stream for affordable housing. And I agree in having auxiliary housing available.
Kurt Stolka.
I agree with Sammy about the bond referendum or additional sales tax to create more revenue so we can rehabilitate these aging properties with the owner or collaborate with Chapel Hill to combine our resources so we may not need to borrow as much money in the future. And I think a bond referendum is more important now than in the future, because due to the lack of annexating ability of the town, our AAA rating may likely not be as good in the future.
Jacqueline Gist.
I always worry a little bit about a sales tax. Sales tax is regressive. It hits poor people more than it hits other people. I also worry when we talk about bringing in town revenues, that's why I've been supporting the commercial non-residential development downtown so we don't have to be taxing our residents. But when you tax, either by sales tax or by raising property taxes, the retired people who live in our neighborhoods, who worked as housekeepers at the university and own their homes, when you increase their tax in order to provide housing for somebody else, that's adding to the problem instead of solving it, which is why I want to use non-residential revenue for that and not a sales tax.
Randy Haven O'Donnell.
Two thoughts. A housing trust fund for emergency escrow and rent subsidy, down payment, et cetera, and exploring and identifying programs and opportunities that subsidize affordable housing. I also want to keep an eye on what's happening with inclusionary zoning in Chapel Hill and see whether some type of inclusionary zoning is viable for Carborough.
And for people who don't know, what would that entail?
the inclusionary zoning so that you have some affordability with the housing at fair market.
So Kurt Stolka is next. Before we get to you, Kurt, Sammy Slade and Kurt Stolka have both gone on record in the last few minutes saying they're in favor of at least considering a bond referendum for affordable housing. Jacqueline Gist, not as thrilled with that idea. Randy Haven O'Donnell, what about you?
Well, I would really want to look into what's happening with bonds and what's happening with the financial markets before I would look to do that. I think we haven't exhausted what we've got on the table, the recommendations from the Planning Board and the Affordable Housing Task Force. So I think our plate is really full over the next year and a half. I think during that time it's worthy to explore it, but I would say we've got at least the short-range game plan mapped out.
Kurt Stolka.
In relation to what Randy was mentioning about inclusionary zoning, there's two types. There's suggested inclusionary zoning, where we really suggest hard to the developer that they please put it in, and there's mandatory. And I think we need to use mandatory inclusionary zoning, because there are a lot of developers that just say, okay, we heard you, and then do whatever they want in terms of the quality of the housing that they offer and the income level of the people that are able to afford it. And I think we need to stipulate what income levels are in a community and maintain a certain percentage of that in each new development.
Sammy Slade.
For the bond referendum, I think that we would have to build it on all the work that we're already doing with affordable housing. It would require an education of how bad, what the need is in our town for affordable housing. And part of the process that we're undergoing with the Affordable Housing Task Force and with the help of staff is to see where are we? What is that inventory of affordable housing, and where are we going with that? And as folks realize that the trend is not looking good for affordable housing, then I think more would be willing to support a bond referendum. It would take the education, but the information, really, to be able to do that.
We've talked about the idea of a bond referendum or the one-cent sales tax as well. Jacqueline Gist raised the idea of a revolving loan fund for affordable housing. Other candidates' thoughts on that? Sammy Slade.
And that's how I would see the application of the bond referendum. That money could be put towards a revolving loan fund to purchase existing housing stock that thereafter gets paid back through rent and or mortgage through the management of existing affordable housing providers that we already have in our town. And as that money gets paid back, we're replenishing the fund so that it could thereafter be reallocated to purchase more homes.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Stolka.
I'd like to ask to everyone else, what other methods could we fill that revolving loan fund for affordable housing besides bonds or a sales tax? What other options do we have to utilize that besides maybe impact fees or something of the sort?
Well,
Sammy Slade.
I didn't mean to say a sales tax. In Durham, there is a penny for affordable housing, and I would like to get more clarity and understanding. And I know Chapel Hill is looking into it too, and I'm not sure exactly what they're meaning by where they're going to, you know, whether it's going to be at the cost of not providing another service, or whether they're talking about increasing a property or sales tax. But it is something that I think we should put on the table and explore.
Jacqueline Gist.
Our commercial revolving loan fund started with, I can't tell you the exact number of dollars, but all of the additional money came from the interest being paid back from that. We didn't add to that. So it's kind of an amazing stone soup kind of thing, and I envision something similar to that, starting out slowly. There are HUD monies that we get as an area that are allocated to the different programs and to the municipalities. We could put into use some of that. We could ask our existing housing organizations to work with us on creating that.
And then Kurt Stolka.
One thought that just came to mind was, of course, we're not Minneapolis, another city.
It's another one.
But they have a commercial tax base sharing program that's been set up since the 70s, where any new commercial tax growth is spread out evenly throughout the community. And that, I know that's Minneapolis and St. Paul in that region in general. But I think that could really be beneficial in spreading out that new wealth that our area and region as a whole gets in the future with Chapel Hill, Orange County.
And we'll let Randy have an O'Donnell have the last word.
I think working with the partnerships in nonprofits is very important. I think we need to look at publicly funded land acquisition and banking dedicated to affordable housing.
All right. We've got 15 minutes left and a number of questions left to get to, including one that came in via Twitter already. So time for one final lightning round. I will ask as many questions as we can get through in the next 15 minutes. Each question, each candidate will have 30 seconds to respond, and we'll go in different orders. First up, we'll start with Kurt Stolka and go clockwise around. With budget constraints in mind, again, another question that's been raised before, to what extent should the town consider consolidating services with the town of Chapel Hill? And if so, which services would you look to consolidate? Kurt Stolka.
First thing that comes to mind is solid waste initially. And I think, let's see, something else to consolidate. We've already consolidated our bus system. I think we also need to perhaps about integrate, not maybe not consolidating totally, but integrating our transportation departments together, because political borders are not going to, or they shouldn't cut off somebody just because of a town.
Sammy Slayton.
I've heard folks recognize Carrboro having a really good Rex and Park department, and that they would like for Rex and Park Carrboro to be managing the Chapel Hill one. So that could be one. But the other one that's really inspiring coming out of Boulder, Colorado, is they're instituting a municipal utility and creating an alternative to their monopoly corporate utility, which is depending on fossil fuels. And I think there's a lot of enthusiasm for something like that, given that Duke Energy is a monopoly in the state. And I'd be interested in looking into what that would entail. And in Boulder, they've been able to do it so that they're relying on solar and wind and efficiency, and the cost for the customers is going to be the same, if not cheaper, than what they currently
have. Jacqueline Gist.
We already have a great deal of cooperation between the two. With our Rec and Parks departments, we do not duplicate programs. We share programs. Our police and fire work very, very, very closely together. As far as traffic, we contract with Chapel Hill to run the red lights for us. So there's a great deal of cooperation. I think one thing that we could do is look for more economies of scale in purchasing. In doing joint purchasing together. Particularly, I've been wanting the town to help our homeowners associations shore up their flood management systems. And so if the two towns got together to buy stuff for that, it would be better.
Randy Haven O'Donnell.
And I agree with Sammy that the energy efficiency is something, and utilities is something we could definitely look for. I mean, energy doesn't have a boundary, and it doesn't make sense for us to have those boundaries. And solid waste management and recycling, I'm counting on us, you know, working together and unifying a comprehensive plan for solid waste and recycling.
All right. Next question, starting with Randy Haven O'Donnell, going counterclockwise around. Lydia Lavelle is running unopposed for mayor. Assuming she's elected, that'll open up a seat on the Board of Aldermen, which will be filled by appointment. So two questions. First of all, if you're elected to the board, what factors will you consider in making that appointment? Secondly, if you're not elected, will you put your own name in for consideration?
Well, that's an interesting question. you know, if I'm elected, and I certainly hope I am, the appointment is something which I'd love to see a diverse group of folks come forth. I always really appreciate folks who have background on our advisory boards coming forth, because they've learned the infrastructure. We really have wonderful advisory boards, and they're very thoughtful. The second part of the question, if I'm not elected, would I put my name in? Well, you know, if I'm not elected, I think it really makes a statement. And so, you know, I hadn't been thinking about it. You know, I'm a competitor, so I'm not thinking of that piece right now.
Jacqueline Gist.
I'm looking for somebody who, I would be looking for somebody who understands the town, who understands the complexity of the town, and who maybe would bring something new to the board. I think it's very important to have served time on advisory boards, to understand how that works, to understand intergovernmental things. But I think having somebody who had a different skill set than the rest of us, I think that's always a good idea. But somebody who really loves and gets Carrboro, I guess for me, that's the bottom line. And if I don't win, would I put my name in? I don't know.
Sammy Slade.
Yeah, I think that more, even more than well, I mean, I was going to say, like, more than skills is the passion. But if you have the passion, then you already probably are already involved and have some of those skills. So I would look for both of those, kind of like Jackie's describing. If I was to be considered for getting appointed, I agree with Randy. I probably would take this to be a sign that if I lost, that maybe I'm not the right person.
Yeah. Kurt Stolka.
Factors on the appointment. I think that the nearest runner-up in the election should be appointed. I think that's already a transparent process through the votes that people have taken the time to look into the issues, have made their decision on. And I think transparency is the best policy for any appointment process. And if there's a chance that I'm not in, yeah, I probably will throw my hat in the ring because I really want to help change this town and make a positive impact in our community.
All right. Starting with Sammy Slade, going clockwise around, what, if anything, should the board do in the next 2 years to address concerns about towing in Carrboro?
Towing in Carrboro, oh my goodness. Well,
good luck in 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think that for one, we have to expose It's been pretty outrageous to me how towing is happening after hours at one of our main businesses or main places in town. And I find that to be really shameful for the management of that property. So for one, I think that has to be known more. We should also, again, look at ways in which to collaborate with private parking owners and find and encourage and incentivize ways in which parking in our downtown can be shared. I think that would be the most productive way of getting around that issue.
Jacqueline Gist.
It was at my initiative that Carrboro changed the way that we're currently dealing with towing after hearing from people going out at 2 o'clock in the morning out in the country and then not having their credit cards taken. That's terrifying. So it was at my initiative that we now say that they must take credit and debit cards, that it cannot be more than $100, that they have to let you know where your car is. It has to be reported to the police. We need to enforce that. We need to make sure that the tow truck operators are sticking by that. And we also need to work with the surrounding businesses and make sure that they're not towing at 2 o'clock in the morning when it's not bothering anybody.
Randy Haven O'Donnell.
Well, I agree with Jackie, but I also think that there, you know, I have this hope that that we can have courageous conversation in Carrboro to solve the parking issue and maybe look at all the parking in the big picture and work together so that businesses will have shared parking. This idea that these five spots are mine and those five spots across the street are yours really doesn't work to the advantage of the commercial and businesses, the commerce and the business. We really need to have a mindset that we need to share the parking so that, you know, we maybe use less parking in certain areas and that it's a give and take. That's a courageous conversation to have.
Kurt Stolka.
Yeah, similar to the other candidates, I think we need to work with the business owners, utilize that free space that they may not be using. The closest example I can think of, a church. They use their sea of parking for an hour or two once a week. That parking space should be available for other people to use for nearby areas when it's not being used. Of course, it's a private property, so we can't force things on people. We have to be conciliatory. And I think that a parking plan in general in the future will address this, and it won't have these brazen towing incidents getting thrown throughout the media.
All right, next question, beginning with Jacqueline Gist, going counterclockwise around. Voter turnout, this question comes to us from Twitter. Voter turnout in off-cycle years is always low, but turnout for early voting to date may be the lowest ever. We're 3 days in. What are you doing to get the electorate excited and motivated to vote early or on election day?
There were 60 people as of today had done early voting at Carver Town Hall. This is not just an off year, it's an off year. I have been walking neighborhoods. I have been going to many, many forums. I've been talking to my friends. I've had my friends talking to people. Right before we came, I sent out a message to all of my friends saying, turnout's low. This isn't good. You know, it's not good for democracy. It doesn't matter that it's not good for me. It's not good for democracy. Local government impacts your life more than any other level of government does. People should be involved. This is us and the school board. That affects your daily life. So that's the message we need to be pushing out.
Sammy Slade.
Yeah, I've been walking doors, also going to a lot of forums. And, you know, people need to realize, like, we make a lot of decisions in our town. And when you are coming and reacting to something that gets decided upon by us, remember if you were voting or not. There's very few people who already vote, even on popular election cycles. So we need more and more people to be involved.
Kurt Stolka.
I think one of the things that's maybe affecting the numbers is that town halls only open from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. during the weekday when most people are working and they don't have time to vote during the week. So I'm not sure how much of an early voting opportunity people really have besides November 2nd, the Saturday beforehand. So I think we need to really address why this decision was made in the first place to shorten the hours and make it inaccessible for people to come in the early morning or after work.
Randy Haven O'Donnell.
I think people are really frustrated with government and government in North Carolina. And I think that, you know, in the last 6-8 months, there is a sense of being suppressed. And that the confidence in government is down. It's just down, you know, all across the board. And there's a lot of focus on Raleigh. So, you know, not only have I emailed folks and walked through community and gotten on the phone and talked to folks, and I've sat down and had coffee with folks, but just as Jackie said, this is about democracy. And, you know, voter registration is one of the most important things that we can do to keep our voices heard. And this is something that moving forward, it's not about just this election or voting for me. It's about voting in general, that, you know, civic mindedness is what protects us all.
All right. One final word from Jackie Guest.
Really clear. The decision for early voting to be in town hall from 9 to 4 was not a town decision. So
Board of Elections decision?
It was a Board of Election decision. It was not the town. So please don't try to paint us with that brush.
I'm just saying we should ask the question because...
We have asked the question. Yeah, and the question was it was the Board of Elections that made that decision, not the town of Carver.
It shouldn't cost a lot of money to keep someplace open for people to just... tick a box. I don't see how that would be saving that much money.
We've got to wrap up. This concludes our 2013 Carborough Alderman Candidates Forum. Thanks again to the four candidates, Jacqueline Gist, Randy Haven O'Donnell, Sammy Slade, Kurt Stolka, of course, Al Vickers.
Thank you, Aaron Kick.
Early voting is already underway in Orange County. Four sites around Orange County, Carborough Town Hall, Seymour Senior Center, Ramshead Dining Hall, and, of course, the Board of Elections office in Hillsborough. Election day is Tuesday, November 5th. Thanks again to all of the candidates, Anthony Wellman and Alex Curley, running things board-wise. This is Aaron Keck. Election day, November 5th.